Hello, and welcome to the Adventures in Arting podcast, where we analyze, explore, and celebrate the creative journey. My name is Julie Fayfan Balzer, and I am a working artist living outside of Boston. I've been hosting this podcast with my super special co-host and my mom, Eileen Shu Balzer, since 2012. Hi, Mom.
Hello, Julie.
So I'm not sounding quite like myself. I have a little bit of a cold today, and we're also having some fun internet issues. So it's an adventure all around, but we're so glad that you are listening or that you're watching this on YouTube. So welcome. There are two in-person classes coming up if you're interested. The first is called Funny Faces, Creating Portraits with Personality at the Monastery Gallery of Art in Connecticut. That's on Saturday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. That's from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And it's a one-day class. It includes all supplies and lunch for $135. So the official description is, in this exciting one-day event, you'll embark on a whimsical journey into the world of expressive faces. Whether you're a seasoned artist or a beginner, this mixed media collage workshop is designed to be inclusive and inspiring for everyone. From bold strokes to intricate details, Julie will share her expertise, tips, and tricks to help you bring your characters to life. Expect a supportive and lively atmosphere where creativity knows no bounds. So that's all true. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. And then at my home studio, I'm teaching Art Alchemy, Exploring Golden Brand Paints and Mediums, June 23rd through 25th. And again, all supplies are included, plus breakfast and lunch. This is an easy way to come to a class. You just book a hotel or an Airbnb and a flight. People have come in the past from across the country, California. I'm in Boston, as well as out of the country from Canada. I've had a couple students. So grab a friend, come alone, but you're going to leave class with a sort of comprehensive set of, it's not notes, but samples of all these different mediums and paints so that you know exactly what they do, when to use them, what you want to buy, and what you just don't need to buy too, which is really fun. So this is episode 149, how to talk about your artwork. And talking about your artwork effectively can enhance how it's perceived and understood, and talking about it ineffectively can make people less interested in your work. So this topic came up because I participated in an impromptu artist talk at the opening of my latest art exhibit. And I was thinking a lot about which of the panelists were interesting to listen to and which of the panelists were not interesting to listen to. But it also made me think of, so Mom and I went to an artist talk many years ago, and I really liked this woman's work. She did this mixture of watercolor and hand stitching. And when she talked about her work, I became less interested in it. And that's why I remember this talk so well, because I remember thinking, wow, how disappointing to actually have the artist here. And yet the way that she talks about her work makes me value it less, makes me think less of it. And so that made me think a little bit about how to talk about your work. And I remember specifically that one of the things that she said about her work that made me like it less is she talked about how she only worked on her pieces for an incredibly limited amount of time, which, by the way, is totally understandable because it was like intense handwork. But the way that she talked about it was so negative and kind of, I don't want to use the word whiny, but it felt like it was somehow a burden for her to work in this way. And it made me feel like a lack of joy in her work and in her process. And so I had a lot of trouble feeling like it would be something that I would want to have in my home at that point, because it felt like it was filled with like pain or unhappiness rather than like joy of process, right? So that's just one example. But I don't know, Mom, have you ever been to an artist talk where you felt like, I kind of like this work less after listening to this person talk about it?
Actually, usually I like it more. Mm-hmm. But when you like it less, for me, it might be because I like the artist less rather than the work. Because
I was going to say, what makes you like the artist less?
If they talk about their art and are not, there's no clarity of thought, there's no feeling of the process and how they came to it, there's no attempt to reach out to an average person. I know that as a non-artist, I may get something different than you, but I feel that when the artist is talking about their work, it doesn't need to be all highfalutin. Do you know what I mean? It needs to use words that I understand. Here's one of the issues, because this actually comes up not just talking about your work. Whenever you try to explain something to someone else about what you do, no matter what you're explaining, certain categories require further definition in order for people to have a way in to have a conversation with you. For example, if you go to an event and everyone's busy, what do you do? What do you do? And you say, oh, I'm a housewife. What's the follow-up to that, right? I'm a mother, right? These categories are huge, and there's so many ways of approaching it, and there's so much info to give, and it's just a difficult conversation because you haven't been offered a way in. I think if you're the artist and you're talking about your work, also, there may be so many parts, so many different things, and you don't know where to start, or you don't know how to eliminate some. And for example, I pour paint on my surface. You know, it's informational, but it's not helpful. There are certain categories, like, for example, I'm a doctor. Okay, what kind of doctor? You know, what do you do? And in the course of your day, what are some things that come up that would be interesting for me as a non-doctor to know? I just feel like there has to be some clarity from the artist about what are some of the compelling things to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the dinner party conversation thing, which is to say, you know, there are people who can say, like, I'm a physicist, and I don't have any follow-up questions if you're a physicist, by the way. I'm like, oh, that's great. I know nothing about physics, and I don't know how to engage in a conversation with you about it. But if somebody gives me a little bit more, and they say, oh, I'm a physicist, you know, I work in a lab on this blah, blah, blah project or something, then I can ask them about the project. Then I can have a way in. I think most of the time people are looking for a way to enter into a conversation with you.
Right. And the thing about being an artist is there's so many things you could be doing. You could tell your whole history, all the styles and mediums and so on that you've ever used. You could talk about your frustrations. You could talk about your triumphs. You have to focus it in for me as an outsider to engage in this conversation. I want to engage. I just, you have to let me in somehow.
Well, I think that's like how often artists get asked when you say I'm an artist, the first question people say is, oh, what gallery do you sell work at? And then some artists find that to be, I'm trying to think how to put it, like a difficult question if they don't have gallery representation, or a judgmental question, but I don't actually think it is that. I think it's just a way of people trying to engage the only way they know how, which is, oh, artist, gallery. Okay. You know, the same way that if somebody said, I am a lawyer, I might say, oh, what kind of law do you practice? Because that's the only way I know how to follow up with that question. But possible that they don't practice law anymore.
Yeah, the related thing is, for example, when a person says, I'm an actor, if you're not, and then people immediately say, oh, what have you been in that I might have seen? And so there's even that question of feeling unsuccessful if you haven't been in anything that they might have seen. And that question
By the way,
Are you an actor if you're not currently acting?
Right. Well, one thing is, yes, you are. You're an actor if you say you're an actor and you're working on being an actor. But two, what I was going to say is I have often found very useful as a question, instead of trying to get like a very specific follow-up, if you just say to somebody, what are you working on now?
Right.
You know, that can apply to an enormous number of fields. So if somebody says, I'm a lawyer, what are you working on now? If somebody says, I'm a doctor, what are you working on now? I'm a physicist, what are you working on now? I'm an artist, what are you working on now? I'm an author, what are you working on now? Like, somebody's always working on something now. You know, it's like, and even, you know, I have a friend who's, you know, currently unemployed and looking for a job. And one of the things I often do when I see him is I say, if I don't want to ask how the job search is going, because sometimes that's a sensitive question, I'll say, you know, what are you up to these days? Or have you read anything good? Or, you know, try to engage in a new way. So that's sort of from the outside perspective. But we've sort of danced around my first tip, which is identifying your audience, right? Because I think when you're an artist, there are really three kinds of people that you talk to. You talk to fellow artists, at which point you can get into a detailed conversation. You talk to who I would call like art folk, that is to say people who work like in the art world. So collectors, gallerists, curators. So people who are knowledgeable, but not necessarily art makers. Right. And then they're sort of a talking to the general public. So I'm going to have a different conversation with each of those types of people because they have a different knowledge base as well as what they're actually interested in. So I made some bullet points about each of these groups, which I will share with you. So talking to fellow artists, colleagues, you could think of this as like your colleagues. It's really, why are you talking? You're thinking about networking, you're thinking about community, all those kinds of things. So the first is, obviously you can use art terminology. So artists are usually familiar with art jargon. So you can use specific terms related to the techniques, styles, mediums, and concept you're using, right? So like I can say to somebody, oh, I'm really interested in Chincolé printmaking right now. Like that's what I've just been obsessed with for the last month or so, and assume that a fellow printmaker is going to know what that is. And we can just enter into the conversation from there, where I might not say that to somebody else. I might explain what that is along the way. Similarly,
you also might talk about some of your current frustrations or roadblocks that might seem petty or ridiculous to someone who's not in the art world, but which a working artist would understand.
Yes. And I think this is actually one of the problems with the internet, which is a lot of times we write tweets or posts for a particular audience in mind, but our posts reach more people than that. And so then people are like, why are you complaining about this? Or this is stupid. Or do you know what I mean? Because they're not the audience that was intended for it. And so they take it a different way. And then it becomes kind of mushed up and weird. But in person, the nice thing is that you can figure out who this other person you're talking to is. So similarly to art terminology, you can refer to art history or other contemporary artists. You know, if you're talking about artists that inspired you or art movements, like I can reference, you know, maybe Kirchner and expect that most working artists would know who that is, whereas I might have to explain who he is to other people. You can also talk about current exhibitions or, you know, things like that. Like, oh, did you see that exhibit at whatever? And assume that if they're local, they probably saw the same thing that you did. I think that you can feel free to discuss process in detail. I think that that can be very boring to people who aren't artists. But artists themselves, I think, appreciate insights into your creative process. They're interested in how you developed your ideas, your techniques, you know, challenges you're facing, like you were saying, all that kind of stuff. I think conceptual discussions are also really interesting to artists, you know, why you're doing work, sort of theme, symbolism, deeper meanings, you know, I think like concepts about art, thoughts about like the deeper meaning behind things. Like these are the drunk conversations, although I'm old enough now that they're just completely stone cold sober wanderings, but they have that feeling sometimes. And then just exchanging ideas, right? That you're trying to do some cross pollination. I read this thing that said that because housing is so expensive in New York City, it has changed the ways that artists cross pollinate. because it used to be like you would live above a jazz dancer and next door to a musician, and there'd be, you know, a poet down the hall. And so there was kind of this cross-pollination that happened just where you were living, just where you were breathing. But people are so sectioned away in different places now that they don't live like that anymore. You're more likely to be living next to, like, you know, people who have nothing to do with what you do. And like artist housing is very much a thing of the past. And so you tend to only meet people at things that are for your genre of art. You know what I mean? So you go to an opening of a lot of art exhibits as opposed to being at a dance thing and at this thing. And you just know fewer people. So really residencies have become one of the last bastions for that kind of cross pollination between, you know, the different disciplines. Okay, so talking to art folk, meaning industry professionals, collectors, people like that, and this is really much more in the sort of sales networking kind of vein. So like the difference to me is if I am sitting next to a fellow artist and I'm sitting next to, like, let's say someone who I know is a collector and buys a lot of art, I will tend to not complain about stuff to them, right? I'm going to keep it a little more professional, you know, trying to like strike a balance between, you know, being real about who I am and all that kind of stuff, but also being very clear that like I'm a professional who can deliver and I'm speaking very positively about my work. And I think really focusing on substance. So instead of wandering through like random thoughts that I'm having at the moment, I think I might more concretely talk about like my 1 minute elevator pitch or those quick things I know that I'm really good and that I'm really clear on. So stay away maybe from the work that's in progress right now that I haven't fully thought out, and think more about what I can actually offer that's like done and sort of full rounded. I also think curators and collectors and gallerists and stuff, they all like context. So if you can offer context for your artwork within the larger, you know, art landscape, that's really helpful, because if you happen to be sitting next to somebody or run into somebody and they're like, oh, hey, and you're like, oh, hi, you know, my artwork is in the school of XYZ, or, you know, I had a portfolio review with a university gallery curator recently. And one of the things he said, he always asks when people submit shows, is he said, I want to know why the show should happen at this gallery as opposed to any gallery. I want to know why it needs to happen now, you know, at this moment, as opposed to 10 years from now. Like, is there a reason for it to be here right now? And that actually reminded me of when I was a theatrical director. And we used to talk about this idea of like, when you're picking a season and you're picking shows, you can't just do King Lear because it's a good show. You want to do King Lear because it means something right now, because this show in the cultural zeitgeist in this moment has some sort of impact. And that's true for, you know, for modern plays as well. It's not just old plays. Like, it has to have a reason to be here right now. And I think when you're chatting to somebody about your work who's in the industry, it's really helpful. I mean, probably with anybody, but it is really helpful to root it in why this work is happening right now. So for instance, so it's not all theoretical, I often tell people that a lot of my work is about motherhood, because my child, my wonderful, beautiful child, was an atom bomb that went off in my life and exploded, you know, things completely. And I can't put myself back together the way I used to be. And I really have passed the threshold of life will never be the same again. And so a lot of my art now grapples with this idea of like who I am now and who I am in relationship to him. And there's no way for me to create work that is not about that, because that's the reality of every day for me, you know? And I think you can talk about that in line with, you know, a panoply of artists before me who have had tragedy, accidents of various kinds, like Frida Kahlo, who, you know, painted about her pain and about, you know, the bifurcation of herself and like all sorts of things that had happened to her, you know, people who lost their sight, their mobility, who had enormous changes in their work, people who went to war and came back. Like, there is a huge canon of artists who have been through something that has changed them, sometimes good, sometimes bad, and, you know, come out with artwork that reflects that change. So that's some context for my work in this moment, right?
You know, when you were talking just a while ago about why now?
Yeah.
Why is this work relevant now? I was thinking of, it can also help you, the artist, in your thinking about your art and with the way you go about it. Back to when you were a theatrical director and you did a wonderful version of Macbeth in which it was played as if it was a crime family. And I thought, if you could, the really good plays, you can do them a number of different ways, and it changes the way it feels, or it brings up parallels to our contemporary life and makes us think about that and realize that. And the same thing with your art is, you could, if you're thinking about why now, it might be right now, it would be relevant because, and then you go through a list. Not that you try to, you know, artificially create that, but maybe you'll find it because one of the things you do, for example, let's say, is you make ungendered figures. So maybe in this time of thinking a lot about gender, then people might think, oh, this makes it more relevant.
Yeah. And I think, like, there can be an aspect of your work. It doesn't have to be the entirety of it.
But it just, it could generate some ideas for you, the artist, if you think about what is it that these days is going around in your head and in the general conversation.
Yeah. So talk a little bit more about talking to art folk and industry professionals. Just, I think, engaging in dialogue, encouraging questions and comments, being open to feedback from it, and looking at it as an opportunity to deepen the conversation about your artwork. I think sometimes there can be a tendency to want to talk at people who you think can do something for you, as opposed to also, you know, listening to what they have to say or what they need. And then when you talk to the general public, you know, this is PR, it's art enthusiasm. And I think of it a lot as, like, you know, there are so many scientists who've done a really good job making science interesting to the masses, you know, who have, from science shows that have been on to, you know, just the people that they trot out every time there's a complicated science idea to break it down, or mom, you know, like, there's that guy, Dr. Chow, I think, or what's his name? He's a doctor who you love, who talks about football from a doctor's perspective.
Football doctor.
Yeah. And he does a great job, like, breaking it down and explaining things in really, like, clear terms. And I think in a lot of ways, like, there are some talking heads who do that on TV, who, like, their special skill is to break down complicated political ideas, 400-page documents you're never going to read, into something you understand. Like, every, you know, even, like, some of the great speakers who people love, like Brené Brown, it's not that she's coming up with unique ideas. It's that she's an extraordinary presenter of ideas. All right. She's coming up with incredible ways to explain things to you in a way that you can hear them. And so I think when you're talking to the public, like, that's the biggest thing you have to think about, is how can I explain this to somebody who has no interest in art? And I often think, so for instance, when I used to do HSN a lot, Home Shopping Network, I always felt like I had done a good job when the very, very bored, almost always male crew members who were running the cameras and all the backstage stuff I could see the moment when they would become interested in the machine, when they would become interested in the scan and cut, and they would actually think, like, oh, that's cool, as opposed to being bored beyond belief, you know? And I always thought, like, that's my goal, is to make that guy who's holding the camera want one of these for himself, you know? So what are some ways that you can do that? I think one of the things that you start with is you start with keeping it simple. right? You don't want to overburden people with like all the complications of it. You want to think about it as an iceberg, and you want to do just a little bit that sticks out of the water. So you're going to avoid using complex art terminology. You're going to use plain language and talk about its key elements. I think you also want to tell a story.
Right. I think the story is really important.
So that's actually a thing that you've always said to me too, is like, you want to use a metaphor, something that people can understand. You want to tell some version that people can get a hold of. And I know when I was working on these facilitating workshops with my father, one of the things he always talks about is stories connect other people to you. They make you them see you in a different way. People can relate in stories in a way they can't. So can you narrate the inspiration behind your artwork in a way that captivates your audience? Can you share personal anecdotes, experiences, or emotion that's, you know, that influence your creative process? What kind of story can you tell about yourself and about your work that can be really helpful?
What were you thinking? Want to, what music were you listening to? What experience did you have that generated an interest in this particular thing? They exactly. want to get a sense of you as a person. Otherwise, they could just look at your art and not talk to you.
Exactly. And I think stories stay with people in a way that like general information doesn't, because a story is kind of a capsule and it really can be very helpful. The same way that my saying like the story about my son coming into my life like a bomb, that's actually a story because you understand, you know what I mean, the parts of it and how it goes. And I can tell a story about being with him, and that very easily then just fills in to that story slot. And this is also related to wanting to relate it to everyday life. Can you connect your artwork to relatable experiences or universal themes that resonate with a broader audience and help them see how art can evoke emotions, spark imagination, or provoke thought, even if they're not familiar with art theory? So maybe not talking about the technical aspects of your work, you know, but you can relate it. And I was thinking about this because I'm working right now on a bio of a British artist and a British pop artist. And one of the things about him is that he was a carpenter in his early life. And so you see it in his artwork that he's using a lot of woodworking in the way that he shapes his art. And so thinking about that, you know, I think like that's very relatable, and you can find different ways to like get people attached to your materials or your ideas, relating it to somehow everyday life. You know, like if you say, you know how the dishes are always piling up in your sink and it seems like you always have to wash dirty dishes, and like life is just what happens between cycles of having to wash dishes. At least that's the story of my life. But the same thing is true in my art studio, which is I always feel like there's always brushes that need washing. There's always a messy table. There's always, you know, something that needs cleaning. And so an art studio in that way, you know, becomes that thing where just like, I don't want to wake up to a sink full of dirty dishes. I don't want to come back to my studio and find that it's a mess. I want to have it set for the next day. Right.
Right.
And I think the other thing is to focus on visual elements, things that people can readily see. If you've ever watched a school group with a teacher, you'll often see that the first thing that they do is they say, what do you see? Tell me what you see. Because the visual elements are everybody's first way into the work. Colors, shapes, composition, textures, you know, and you can help your audience visualize what they're seeing and understand how these elements contribute to the overall message or mood of the piece. So you can say like, notice how I used an enormous amount of blue. Traditionally, blue was a very expensive color because it came from lapis lazuli, which was like a jewel and blah, 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 you know, and so I'm trying to connect to this idea of wealth throughout history by using, you know, and that changes maybe the way that they see the blue in your work and they can understand it more deeply, as opposed to starting from the idea, the concept, which might be a little more foreign to them. I think also encouraging observation, again, that old idea of like, what do you see? Which is, you know, you can allow people to share their initial impressions and interpretations of your work. And I think that can be interesting to you too. You know, when people are confused or don't get it or have a totally different interpretation of what they see. The other thing that I think is important and relates back to the story I told at the beginning of the podcast is to be enthusiastic. You have to show passion and enthusiasm when discussing your artwork, because your excitement can be contagious and it can make your audience more engaged and interested in what you have to say, right? You know, you have to be the best advocate for your artwork.
Actually, I notice it a lot on these little short Instagram stories and TikToks and so on, which is if the person who's featured is just sort of desultory, you don't want to watch it. You want to watch someone be excited about something.
You do. We like it. Like, enthusiasm is contagious. And especially if you're passionate about your work, I think other people will feel it. It's the reason why, listen, like, we all have down days. We all have negative things that happen to us. But I don't really want to wade in someone else's misery. Like, that sounds like a really not happy, good, fun time. Right? I want to bathe in someone's joy and excitement. I want to be thrilled for them when they win something. I want to be, you know, delighted that they're loved. I want to be excited because they're pumped about this thing that they're getting to do. Like, all of those things, I want to feel the good vibes. So I think that's why, not that your work has to be always positive, but you should be positive about what you're creating. You know, it's the same thing as, like, I know many people who create art that is environmental cause related, right? And so that can be a very negative sort of downer topic. And it's not that they want you to feel down about it, but they want to talk about why they're passionate about this topic, why cleaning up the environment matters to them, how, you know, combing the beach for all this garbage to make this artwork was exciting because not only did they get to make the art, but they also felt like they had cleaned the beach and wouldn't it be wonderful if we all could do this? And, like, do you know what I mean? They can get you excited about the art and the cause, even though it can be a negative cause, you know? And so I think, again, keeping your audience in mind and really choosing how to talk about your art. The other practical thing I'll say is you should be able to have, like, a 1 to 2 sentence thing that you can just say about your art without having to think about it, right? My name is Julie Fayfan Balzer. I'm a painter, a printmaker, and a collage artist living and working outside of Boston. My work is about identity and perception and how they are often not the same, period. I can say that in my sleep and I can create variations. I can do a 10-minute speech about it, or I can just say that, you know, and you should have something that works for you. And I think it evolves over time as you evolve, you know, and if I'm talking about specific body of work, I might say something about motherhood and feminism. And if I'm talking to somebody else, I might talk more about, you know, my identity as biracial or whatever it is, because identity and perception, these two ideas, I have many identities and people have many perceptions of me and they don't always meet. Only sometimes does the Venn diagram really work out, you know? Okay, so what are some things that you can do to come up with your little 2-minute doodad? It's not even 2 minutes. What was that, like a 30-second, 2 sentences?
Yeah.
I think you just need to
write it down first and see what kind of word salad you come up with. Don't edit it while you're writing it the first time. Just put down everything. You might even just make lists of things that are relevant to your artwork. And then start to winnow things out. What's redundant? What's no longer true? What's, you know, aspirational? What's too nonspecific? And then I think you need to start auditioning various things. And you may find that that's what you thought you were doing isn't actually what you're doing now. That it's really what you used to do. And that your interests have changed. I think you can also enlist a trusted friend and ask them what they think about this list of words as it applies to you.
Yeah. And I think you also have to allow it to evolve, because 8 months ago, I think I would have said, hi, my name is Julie Fayfan Balzer. I'm a mixed media artist and my artwork is about juxtapositions of disparate objects. Which at the time, I think it was all true. And it's very close to what I do now, but I've changed the language and my thought about it a little bit based on the work that I've been doing. And I think, again, how you do that is you have to write down what you do. Like, what kind of artist are you? Like, people want to know, are you a sculptor? Are you a painter? Are you a fiber artist? What do you do? That's like thing number one. Then thing number two is, what's the general thought behind your art? I paint portraits. I paint quirky portraits. I paint portraits of veterans. I paint portraits of dogs and parakeets. I paint quirky portraits of dogs and parakeets. Like, you know what I mean? Figure it out. Or it can be conceptual. You know, I make artwork about communism. I make artwork about the environment. I make, you know, political artwork that talks about body positivity. Like, you can get it down to a couple words on what the essentials are. And then the trick is to just keep revisiting it over and over until you're sure that you're talking about the work you're making now, not what you aspire to make, not what you used to make, but what you're actually making right now. I think that's really important because we all evolve and change.
And actually, thinking through this process can help you in your evolution.
It can. And it actually helps me to make decisions about my artwork, because I'll say, like, listen, my artwork's about identity and perception and how they don't always, you know, they aren't always the same thing. So when I'm looking at this piece and I'm trying to decide what to do with it next, I can ask myself, what is this saying about identity versus perception? And how can I think about that visually? And so I will be like, oh, I need to have a missed connection here. Oh, I need to have something that doesn't meet here. And those are all metaphors, right? Visual metaphors for how I'm thinking about identity and perception not quite lining up. And so I think, again, anytime you can think about, you know, words to explain what you do, it can help you in the process. Because the same way that 8 months ago I was thinking, oh, I'm interested in juxtaposing disparate things, it might look very much the same. Things that don't meet up, things that don't touch, stripes next to, you know, floral, whatever it is. But it is a slightly different way of thinking about it. And I think I will continue to slightly evolve. And that's the idea, which is it's like tiny turn, tiny turn, tiny turn until you're something or someone totally different 5 years from now. So, Mom, as we wrap up, any last thoughts on talking about your work?
No, but as I said toward the beginning, I think it's relevant in a lot of areas, talking about yourself or your interests or your children. You know, you have to do all these things. Consider the audience. Consider what's happening now. You know, I'm not going to tell them about food training when you're like in your 40s. I mean, that would be ridiculous. The point is, I think that the process of defining what you're doing now is a useful exercise in virtually all aspects of your life, because it forces you to think about it and to realize what direction you're moving in, what's working for you and what's not working for you. And that enables you to make some decisions about maybe altering what you're doing or recognizing that you've already altered it, moving in a different direction, because it's the old cliche, the only thing that's not changing is that there's always change. I think that's what people do, like when they're doing resolutions, January, New Year's resolutions, is they take a moment often to think about where would they like to go, and they might even be able to remember what they resolved last year and say, I've made progress in this particular thing. And I think it also feels good to know that you've made progress, or maybe that's not in your interest anymore. And so you don't care. I mean, and that's another good recognition.
Yeah, I think this is maybe like a bigger topic that we should talk about on another podcast, but I think it's really important to be able to verbalize what your intentions are. Because until you can really verbalize it, it's really hard to achieve it, you know?
And so sometimes you know if you've achieved it.
Right. So sometimes it's like you have a vague idea. And I always think, like, you know, have a hypothesis, just put something down. This is what I think I'm trying to achieve. Then either you do or you don't, or you discover that there's a left turn that you'd rather take, but you've at least said something about where you're intending to go, so that you at least now have a barometer of whether you're being successful or not successful, you know? And if you decide to take a left turn, fantastic. And if you're not successful, then you know that you can try again. But if you never state where you're going, then you're just kind of wandering. And I think it's hard to improve when you're just purely wandering.
I think you also have to set, people have said this for a long time, but it's really true. You have to break things up into small steps. So you don't want to say, I'm going to run the Boston Marathon this week. You might say, so I'm going to try to get outside and walk several times a week. You know, and then you build it up from there and see if that's working for you. The point is, don't make your life impossible. Make it possible. And then you'll see if you like it or not. So it's the same thing with your art. So when you're talking about your art to other people, it's not about like presenting an in-person perfect Instagram world in which you're like the queen of everything. You just need to say, oh, this is what I'm doing right now. This is what interests me right now.
Yeah. The thing that I notice about very successful artists, like I'm talking about, you know, $100,000 painting artists, is that they feel no need to talk about their work in like insane terminology or with anything like that. They talk very practically about the work, about the process, about what they're interested in. And they often say like, well, why did I do it that way? Because that's what I was interested in at the time. Like, you know, there isn't a huge meaning behind it. They don't feel the need to put anything sort of false on it because they understand their own, they understand their value, I guess is what I would say. And I think sometimes when we don't understand our value,
right,
we have a great desire to fluff it up, to make it sort of grander.
Add your resume.
Yeah. Right. And I think that actually does the opposite. Right. And it's kind of like when somebody says, like, I'm really mature. The first thing I think is, well, you just said I'm really mature. So it probably means that you're not, you know? And so it's like saying I'm classy. Like no one who's classy says I'm classy. So just, I think it's like being authentic and just absolutely being yourself and being practical about it, you know, makes it more interesting to other people. The same way that I still remember, and this has got to be 20 years ago, I went to a mixer for my college, like alumni club. I'm in New York City. I say, this guy and I start talking. Within like one sentence, he tells me, he said, he's like, my bonus this year was $600,000. And I was like, wow. I mean, that's a lot of money, but is that like your definition of yourself? Is just how much money you make? Like, what an odd thing to say to somebody in like sentence two, right? Of having a conversation. And so it's the same thing as like, if you met somebody and they're like, I'm a mathematician, I'm a Fields Medal winner, you'd be like, okay, wow, that's amazing. Why did you feel the need to tell me that? Like right away. People don't need to justify themselves to exist. And you as an artist definitely don't need to justify yourself to exist. So you can find a way to talk about what you're saying without having to say, I'm published and I'm in many shows and I've won tons of awards and I'm, you know what I mean? Whatever else it is, you can just say like, I'm an artist, I mix together painting, collage, you know, and drawing, and I'm interested in exploring X, Y, Z, you know, and they can just have a real conversation about it. Okay, that's my soapbox statement. So I will just, before we go, I'll just tell you that Practical Color for Painters is ongoing if you're interested. Color is a foundational part of making art. You can join me for a wonderful interactive workshop that breaks all of the complicated ideas down into simple and practical lessons. And you can find that at ballsdesigns.com. You can let me know in the comments whether you think I should keep this Kathleen Turner voice if it suits me or if it's hurting your ears and you really want me to get well. And if you want to connect and find me. You should
have jumped on the guy who got the $600,000 bonus, although, you know.
I mean, 20 years ago, that was even more money than it is now.
Exactly.
Okay, so you can find me at juliebalzer.com or all over social media as @BalzerDesigns. But I really hope you'll sign up for the free weekly newsletter That's the best way to make sure you keep up on the latest news. There's a big button on the homepage of juliebalzer.com where you can do that, or you can go to the show page for this podcast to find the link. If you'd like to help the show, you can leave a review, mention us on social media, or tell a friend. All of those things help other people find the show. Thanks so much for listening and subscribing. We'll see you the next time, hopefully with a real voice and internet that works, on the Adventures in Arting podcast.